I've never been given the gift of telepathy, let alone telepathy over time. But as I was looking at these texts, I was thinking, I wish I knew what the Revised Common Lectionary people were thinking, putting Hebrews on the fourth Sunday of Advent. It really doesn't make a lot of sense. It doesn't fit. And I was thinking, well, you know, who am I to say such a thing? And then I read Walter Brueggemann asking the exact same question and felt slightly better about myself, that if people who know a lot more about this kind of thing wonder, then I'm okay to wonder as well. Doesn't mean I can ignore it, and I didn't. Hebrews has been a very significant book for me. I find myself turning to the book of Hebrews when I don't know where to go, when I need some kind of consolation, some kind of encouragement, something or other, and I turn to the Bible. I've been doing it for just about as long as I've been turning to the Bible for those kinds of needs, something I didn't do for a number of years, not to my benefit. So I looked at Hebrews again, and I said, okay, so what exactly is going on in Hebrews? Like, why do we see this here? And let's remember for a moment that the writer of Hebrews, we don't know who wrote it, but whoever wrote it was writing it primarily and specifically to people who were well-versed in the Jewish traditions. At the time of the writing of Hebrews, those first century or so after Jesus died, most of the people who were following Jesus, followers of the way, as it was sometimes called, were certainly coming out of a Jewish background. But then there were some who were even more so, and so someone wrote the book of Hebrews for those kind of people. And that's why we have this business in here about sacrifices and this kind of thing. Because this was part of their life. What makes it even more interesting is that the psalm that's quoted here isn't quoted out of the Hebrew Bible, but out of the Greek translation called the Septuagint. So somebody's making points there about something. We don't know all of it, of course, because we don't know all of anything, really. But we know that there's a specific purpose here aimed at these people. And what could it be? Well, what it is, at least what I think it is, and what some other people are at least considering as well, is that it's another reminder that God had been trying something with people for a long time, with the nation of Israel, and it hadn't worked. I've said it before, I'll almost certainly say it again, that we don't know everything about sequences and why God does things the way God does. We don't know why it took God so long, from our perspective, to realize that this wasn't working. And obviously it didn't come as a surprise to God. You know, a couple of thousand years ago, God didn't go, you know, they're just not getting it. I wonder what's gone wrong. Because one of the things that's interesting in this is that we have this statement, sacrifice and offering you did not desire. And then down a little bit further, with burnt offerings and sin offerings, you were not pleased. This is somebody talking to God who said, do these things. So what's going on? Well, I said, we don't know all of that, but what we do know is that by the time Jesus came, it had become completely obvious to everybody that the sacrificial system wasn't doing everything that it should. If nothing else, you had to keep doing it. Did a sacrifice for sin today, did one a week ago, you figured you're going to do one in another week or whenever it might be, whatever your particular cadence was. It happened over and over again. So something had to change. And it did. Jesus came. Sacrifices, burnt offerings, sin offerings you did not desire, you weren't pleased with them. And he said, here I am. I have come to do your will. Jesus came. Well, why? One of the things that we know about God, as I said, we don't know everything about God. How can we? We barely know everything. Well, we don't know everything about ourselves, and we're right here. So it shouldn't surprise us that we don't know everything about God, but there are some things we do know. And one of the things we know is that God cannot be compelled. There's nothing that we can do that will force God to do something. God is the unmoved mover, as it's sometimes said. So why? Why would God come here? Well, as I was thinking out loud this morning and thinking over the last few days, many of us in this room have raised children. And it was a lot of work. We're happy they're here. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, we're glad of them. But when you think back to them, it was hard work. So think for a moment, how much would somebody have to pay you to do the same for somebody else's child? Not just, you know, feed them and wash them, but think back to those things that you did, or if you don't have children of your own, think back to what you've seen other parents doing, or maybe you can remember what your parents did. You know, those things that we do, sitting up with kids and all of that stuff, how much would someone have to pay you to do that? I had twins. There's no amount of money you could pay me to do that again. It's just not possible. I mean, not only am I a lot older now and have a lot less energy, and, well, they wore me out in some ways, but even back then, you could not pay me enough to do that. Okay, so, well, let's go to the other end then. What threat could I imagine that would do the same? And I really couldn't come up with anything there either. I respond to threats like most of us do, so I could see maybe trying, but I wouldn't be successful. Well, if money and threats don't work, why did I do it? Possibly the lamest rhetorical question ever. We do it because we love them. Not money, not worry about things going wrong, not worrying about somebody coming to check up on us or any of those things, because none of those are enough. I've said frequently, when you go back and you look at the pictures of the first couple of years after the twins showed up, and pictures of the four of us, and they always look great, and we always look terrible. We look like we have the flu or something. Because we're just tired all the time. I mean, one baby takes up all your time. Two just sort of adds on top of it. Wouldn't change anything, but I'm not gonna mislead you saying it was a walk in the park. Generally speaking, for the first couple of years, kids go through 70 diapers a week. We had two. You do the math. I would not do 140 diapers a week for money. Maybe for a week if you gave me a lot of money, but not for week after week after week. And yet I did it. And it didn't just stop there. It's not just when they're helpless and cute and they stay where you leave them. That's one of the best stages of children, by the way, when they're cute and they don't move. I mean, they wave their arms around, but, you know, if you go away for a second and come back, they're exactly where you left them. Once that stage is over, you never know where they are, really, unless you're looking right at them. But it doesn't end there. I've made a fool of myself for my children because they wanted to do something. They wanted to play a game in a shopping center or something. There is no force on earth that would induce me to do that other than my children. No amount of money. You put a gun to my head, I'd probably just say, oh, well, go ahead. I have life insurance. You know, I don't do making a fool of myself. I hate it. Except when it's for my kids. I just did it. Didn't even think about it till later. I went, well, that must look kind of silly. I didn't care. Because I love them. Love makes us do all kinds of things that we wouldn't do otherwise. Have you ever noticed people who are in love just like everything a little bit more? Not just the person they're in love with. You notice they're just so much more pleasant to be around? That's one of the things about this time of year. We find it easier to be nice to people. We find it easier to be pleasant at this time of year. And when I was younger, I used to say, that's terrible. Not because we were nicer, but we should be that way all the time. Because as most young people, I was a little black and white. And it just, you grow out of it. You grow out of it, you grow out of it. All you young people, you'll grow out of it and you'll be happy. We'll just leave it at that. Now, I think at least we have one time of the year when people go out of their way to be nice. It's wonderful. People hold the door for you that wouldn't hold the door for you otherwise. People let you in traffic. Now, it doesn't work all the time. Yesterday, we were at a drive-thru. It was Heather and Neela and I. And it was one of those two-lane ones. And so we're in this lane, somebody over there. And their car is radiating irritation. I don't know how you do that. If it's intuition or something, you just have this feeling about somebody else and what they're going. And so we're a little bit ahead of them. And then I'm assuming at first they're making room for the person behind them to get up to the... No, they just want to be that close to my bumper. And so the angle changed a little bit, and I look in my rearview mirror, and I see somebody who looks grumpy. And seems to be getting grumpier by the moment. Could just be the facial construction they have, I don't know. But they seem grumpy. Move ahead. They are once again, they're way closer than they need to be. I'm thinking, okay. So I'm looking in the rearview mirror. It's taken a long time. I tell Neela, just to make her laugh, I said, well, I'm going to teach that person a lesson. Neela was also having a bad day, so any way I could make her laugh was worth it. So I did, and I taught that person a lesson by buying their food. And I thought, you know, I don't know what kind of day they're having. This is a stressful time for a lot of people. Yesterday was the last Saturday before Christmas. Maybe they work on Sunday. Maybe they just don't shop on Sunday. Maybe they're just really behind. I don't know. And I don't care. Because it doesn't matter to me why they're upset, why they look grumpy. They just did. And I thought, you know, it's impossible that somebody is going to be buying so much food in a drive-thru that it's going to somehow impair our ability to be economically feasible. I'm just going to buy their food, like 10 bucks. And I thought, if this gives them a second, when they come up to the window, and the person says, oh, the guy ahead of you paid for it and told me to say Merry Christmas to you. If it makes them feel better for a second, it's worth it. Because I wasn't teaching them a lesson. That was just to make a 12-year-old laugh, and it worked. I wanted them to know, at some level, that they were okay. That they were a good person. That no matter how close they were behind me, maybe that's just the way they drive all the time, and they have one of those unfortunate facial constructions, I don't know. But if they were having a bad day, I hope it made it just a little bit better. Why? Because over a long period of time, I've realized that people are worth it. Full stop. People are worth it. Whatever it is changes from day to day. Yesterday, it was about 10 bucks. I love this time of year because it reminds me of that. It kind of points out a flaw in me as well, that I frequently don't think of this except at this time of year. I forget how easy it is. What did that cost me yesterday? 10 bucks and an extra, I don't know, 15 seconds to do the card thing again? Cost me virtually nothing. And it might really improve somebody's day. What a wonderful thing to do. Not because you're going to get something, although I guess now you might think better of me, so I wasn't planning on that. I wasn't planning on telling anybody about it particularly, but it just seemed to fit with what I was saying this morning. So I told the people at Knox and I told you, so I guess there goes my treasure in heaven. I'm okay with that. I did it not because anybody forced me to. I did it because I thought they needed it. And at some deep level, I did it because I have, much to my surprise, become someone who loves people, even people I don't know. A gift from God changing me from the inside out in ways that were literally unimaginable to me in my 20s and below. I did that not for money, not for a threat. Now imagine for a moment someone who doesn't have all the baggage that we all do, looking at the world overall and saying they need something. They don't need a bag of fast food. They need something much more significant than that. They need to know that God loves them, loves each of us, not humanity writ large, not the population of the world as an abstract concept, but as us, as me, as you, loves me, loves you. And the best way to do it is to just go there and show them. I don't know what the conversation was in the Trinity, but it might have gone something like that. These people need to know. They're not getting it any other way. I'm just going to go and show them. There are all kinds of stories, like fictional treatments of this, plays of the angels going, are you crazy? You're going to fill all those in as you wish. Jesus came because he loves us. God came because God loves us. Because we couldn't pay God enough. We couldn't threaten God enough. It came from God or it came from nowhere. At this time of year, we remember, we celebrate, we delight in the reality that God, who lacked nothing, came to us to fill our need. What an extraordinary thought. One that we have as a theological point to hang some of our faith on. But every once in a while, it comes up again, and I run smack into it again, and it makes me stop. Some days it takes my breath away. God loved me that much. There were years I didn't even like myself, let alone love myself, and God loved me. I don't know what your life was like, but there were days, I'm sure, when you weren't all that crazy about yourself. And God said, I don't care. I'm coming anyway. You need this, so I'm going to give it to you. Today is the Sunday of love. I'm glad we have one. I'm glad we have one that pushes us to pay attention to what this all might mean. Because that's what it does. And as I was thinking of this whole idea, as I was wondering, as we talk about this Sunday, how do we do the question is like, what does love look like? Sometimes it looks like a baby.